Yeah, you got the lesser of the two for this presentation today. Hopefully I can do it justice for Scotty. He just recently had a newborn baby in his home taking care of his child, so he won't be able to join us today. But we have a nice presentation for you today. A little bit of a mouthful for our title, but hopefully it'll all make sense when we get through the talk. I guess there is some formatting changes and shifts since in light of some of the issues we had with different computers on, so you'll see some artifacts in this presentation, but it'll be pretty minor. So most of us have been seeing presentations in the Organic Symposium this past weekend, for those of you who were there. Over the years, you've seen many presentations on kind of moving in this direction on the development of this cover crop-based system for organic no-till. That's what I'll be focusing on today, which is that bottom bullet, the reduced tillage frequency. But I just want to highlight certainly the number of ways that folks are focusing on reducing tillage in organic systems, a big objective for a number of reasons that have been highlighted all throughout the conference. Perennial crops in the system is clearly always the best, we find, for a whole suite of metrics as it relates to when you're going back into an annual crop. So diversifying your rotations with pastures or hay fields, and then coming back into annual crops. Those annual crops typically outperform on all the metrics that we present on. But, you know, there's a limited markets. Not everybody can get into growing forages or have integrated livestock systems. And certainly there's a lot of producers who just don't want to. And so we're focusing a lot on those production systems. And then I wanted to also highlight there's been a lot of work by Canadians as well as the Europeans who have focused a lot. And their efforts have focused more on the reduced tillage intensity end of things. And they've had a lot of success and a lot of improvements in building soil over the years in those systems as well. So many of you are familiar with the roller crimper, right? This has really helped operationalize our ability to develop these cover crop-based systems. This is a technology that was developed in South America and then brought to the U.S. and has since become popularized by the Rodale Institute, and they've certainly done a great job at marketing this tool and increasing the excitement around this technology. So we're going to jump right in and look at the soybean system, which is what I'll be focusing on today, which is the one we've had a lot more consistent success in, although I think we're starting to really see a lot of improvements in the corn production system. And so here you're looking at cereal rye as the main cover crop that we use, and soybean is no-till planted into that. Cereal rye is a really fast-growing, high biomass-producing cover crop, excellent for weed suppression, and so it's really worked well in this system. And here you see a picture of that roll-down residue and soybeans no-till planted into that. And here's just some more pictures highlighting what it looks like to roll down these mulches. And many of you have been familiar with the work that's been done over the years on weed suppression with these mulches. And historically, the focus has been a lot on physical control, a little bit on allelopathy, but mostly on physical weed control. So, you know, lowering temperature at the soil surface, not having light hit that soil surface to stimulate weed germination, and acting as a physical impedance to weeds to germinate through that mulch. And so there's been a lot of work done on that. Many of you are probably familiar with John Teasdale's work in the early 90s all the way through the 2000s, and certainly the work that's been built upon that. We're going to focus on a little different mechanism that we think is understated and needs a little bit more attention, which is the nutritive effects. So trying to focus on nitrogen availability in the system and how much that plays a role in weed suppression. So we tried to isolate that effect. So objectives are to determine the level and duration of nitrogen immobilization from a cereal rye mulch. And we looked at that across the whole range of cereal rye mulch rates. And then obviously the next question was, is how does that affect the weeds? And so we focused on a dominant weed in our organic rotational no-till systems, which is the pigweed. We used Amaranthus hybridus. And a little nice slant that we added to this experiment was we looked at the distance of the weeds from the soybean row. And we also had weeds seeds that were spread in the soybean row, but I'm not presenting on that. So just 10 and 20 centimeters from the soybean row. So let's look at some of our treatments here. This is really a response surface design. We don't have replication. Okay, we have two sites that we did this at, and it's really almost a 7x7 factorial of cereal rye rates and seven destructive sampling events. And then we place these pigweed seeds at different rows from the soybean row spacing. And here you can see the rates that we used here as high as 15,000 down to zero. And our zero is just rye roots only. So we remove the above ground cover crop, but the presence of the roots were there in that system. And then we also have a no rye check where it was no rye roots and no rye shoots. And I think it's important to mention here, these studies are really hard to do, right? We're always trying to look at ways we can adjust the mulch rate and ask questions about weed response to mulch rate. But there's so many confounding effects that always come into play, right? I mean, in our system, the average biomass was about 8,000 kilograms per hectare of biomass. So that's how much roots, you know, that's the equivalent roots that we have in the soil. But we remove that cover crop biomass and we place it back at these different rates. You know, we're still going into a system that had a common root biomass, but just varying the shoot biomass. And so there's lots of ways we've tried to attack this over the years. This is just one way to do that. There's always some artifacts and challenges to do this well, but this is at least the way we've tried to control the above ground. So these boxes are what we used to implement this experiment where we inserted them in the ground. And for a number of reasons, I'm not presenting on today, but we did a fair number of isotope N15 work to track nitrogen cycling in the soil, in the weeds, in the crop. And we were also very interested in the translocation of nitrogen into the mulch above the soil surface via fungi. And so we have a bunch of work on that that's coming out shortly, but I'm just today focusing on the weed suppression. And so these boxes are quite necessary, one for controlling water flow, but then also it really helps to keep your mulch intact when you're adjusting those rates. So here's some pictures of us. We've had this plate that we built, that constructed, that we can push these boxes down into the ground. Just some more visuals on what that looks like. And then when that biomass was removed from the field, so we go in with a hay bind, we cut the cover crop away. We've got this bare ground, just stubble. And now you can see a sprinkling with a sand mixture, the pigweed seed, at these 10 and 20 centimeters from the soybean row, as well as planting the soybeans in there. And what's unique about what we did in this study is that we wanted to, again, isolate this nutritive effect, this nitrogen immobilization effect. And so to do that, what we did was we actually pulled back the mulch and kept it away from the pigweeds and the soybean, let them emerge so that we didn't have that physical effect of the light impedance and the temperature effects. And then once those plants emerged, we pushed the mulch back in. So we're just trying to, again, focus on the nitrogen immobilization part, allowing those weeds and crops to emerge without the effects of the mulch. So what I'm presenting here is just the decomposition of that cereal rye biomass. And these are our two sites, the Beltsville site and the Goldsboro site. And here you're looking at the different rates of decay of the cereal rye cover crop. And this gives you a sense of what our initial biomass levels were out there and the decay rates. And these biomass levels are very precise because we're removing them with the hay bind. We're taking those samples into a trailer, bringing them under cover, letting them dry out some, and then putting them back out at very precise weights. So our control, our treatments are pretty precise in that regard. And I don't want to go into great detail, but essentially we used an exponential decay model that also incorporated the effects of mulch rate. And so this is really a universal model. And then the different lines you see here are the simulations as a function of holding the mulch rate constant. But the analysis was done as a universal model for the whole set of treatments. And this is the end release that's coming from these cover crops. And you can see that we had a bit more N release at the Beltsville site than Goldsboro, but generally 20 to 30 pounds of N at those higher rates. And what we thought was really neat, we're not going to go into detail about that today, but was really neat was we did see a differential decay constants as a function of mulch rate. And so what I mean by that is that at the very high mulch levels, we had higher decay rates than at the lower mulch levels. And what we're thinking is going on there is that as you get above a certain threshold and mulch rates, you're actually insulating the mulch at that point. Because, you know, mulches are very vulnerable to high fluctuation in temperature and moisture. And then once you start getting these high mulch levels, you start to insulate the lower mulch levels, and so the decay rates can often be more suitable for decay and get faster decay. So here's our soil inorganic nitrogen levels. And this is where I want to kind of go into some of the challenges with our design. You know, so to do the work with the labeling work that we did and the control in these boxes, we didn't have the N numbers that we probably would like to have had, you know, because of the limited number of boxes. It probably would have been better to have a lot more reps so we could see how much inorganic N varied, because you know that it can be variable and it's challenging when you just have 50 end numbers per experiment. But we did have a fairly nice response at two locations, a little bit different than we expected. This is the no cover crop, no roots. So this is how much inorganic N is in the soil at the start of cover crop termination. Fairly high at the Beltsville site, but this is where the cover crop was allowed to stay in that system and was put back on. So you can see that that the cover crop alone, even with the roots, I'm sorry, I said that wrong, even with the roots at the timing of planting, had a very big effect on nitrogen levels, and that carried forward. And then you can see here, this dropping down is really a function of the soybeans and the pigweed plants are getting going, and they're taking nitrogen out of the soil. A little bit different at Goldsboro, which was a heavier soil, but a low fertility site, but you did see more mineralization of N as the experiment got going. But then again, not big differences, even when you had rye roots alone. So again, rye roots are having a huge effect on N immobilization in the system. So just to look at the weeds now, I'm sorry for some of the formatting issues here. I didn't get this fully integrated, but basically this 4 just is referring to the 10 centimeters or 4 inches. So this is the 10 centimeter at the Beltsville site, and this is rye biomass. And while the relationship is not great, we did have a significant effect of relationship between rye biomass and weeds at the 10 centimeter as well as at the 20 centimeter. But we didn't see so much of that at the Goldsboro site. There wasn't strong relationships between that mulch and the weeds. There was some at the very end of the experiment, but it was highly variable, and so these regressions didn't come out very significant. So I'm just going to focus the remaining two slides on the weeds at the Beltsville site. So this is the 10 centimeter, and this is pigweed without any cover crop and no rye roots. So this is what a pigweed plant is going to do. That's a tremendous amount of biomass by a weed in the system, with no inhibitive effects. And look at just, even with the rye roots alone, just surprising how much of an effect it had on weed biomass during the duration of this experiment. I mean, we did see some separation, and the higher values represent the higher mulch rates, and the lower values, the lower weed biomass represents the higher mulch rates, and these values up here are the lower mulch rates. And we saw even more distinction as you got further away from the soybean plant. So the first one was only 10 centimeters. Now we're 20 centimeters from the soybean plant. And we see even more separation and even more pigweed biomass. If you look before, right, this was 7,000. Now we're at 12,000. So big differences as you got further away from the plant. So nitrogen immobilization confers a strong effect on pigweed growth and development. And this was particularly the case in proximity to the soybean row. So soybeans are obviously imposing a competitive effect in both taking up some of that nitrogen, but also having some shedding some light effect, obviously, on the pigweed plants that are 10 centimeters away. We had pigweed plants also in the soybean row that didn't present that data, and those pigweed plants really struggled. So it goes to show you that in this system, really the problem weeds tends to be the weeds that are between the row. If we're planting on 30-inch row spacings, it's those weeds that are in the center of the area that tend to be more problematic in these mulch systems. There's a lot of directions we want to go with this work that we think are important to tackle. We need to really expand this work, just the nitrogen work that we're not doing tracer work with. We need to expand that over a lot more site years, a lot more N numbers. We need to cover more soil texture, climate, and initial nitrogen levels to really get a handle on the drivers and where the action is. Want to extend this measurements to full crop maturity. I mean, we don't have data with crop yields and final weed biomass, so those are the kinds of values that obviously producers are going to want to see. We need to continue to get better distinction between roots and shoots and their contributions. That's a challenge, as I said, because it's always confounding when you're trying to grow different biomass levels and have different root biomass and shoot biomass and test those questions, but that's something we need to continue to try to tackle. And then to start to develop decomposition models that take into consideration these different climatic conditions, mulch rate, and the environmental conditions that are within the mulch. With that, I'll open up the questions.
So was this under an irrigated regime? Because I oftentimes we'll see more weeds under low cover crop residue versus bare soil. and you saw some pretty impressive results with relatively low levels of residue.
Yeah. So the question was, is how does levels of mulch influence weed performance? And absolutely, at these low levels, like the 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 kilograms per hectare of biomass, we often somewhat see a stimulatory effect where it holds in moisture and the weeds can perform a little better, and the weed suppressive mulch is not as effective. It's controlling the weeds, so you get better performance. These sites were not under irrigation. We did have some water management to initiate the experiment when we were setting it up. We did irrigate a little bit, so there was some initial water levels that were adjusted at the beginning of the experiment, but during the course of the experiment, they were not. Chris, did you irrigate your site? Did you need to? Just at the beginning. Yeah, so no.